Welcome everyone to episode 216 of the Reds Unrestricted podcast. I'm your host David Comerford and I'm joined by Liam Toher as we discuss what the future holds for Darwin Nunez at Liverpool.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
So we'll begin today's episode before we get into anything related to Nunez and the recent talk around him and his future with a quick look back on the game against Spurs. Liverpool season obviously in a pretty strange position at the moment. They knew even before this game had kicked off that they'd sealed third place and barring one of the most remarkable turnarounds you've ever seen in football history, they won't be going any higher than that really in the Premier League table either. So they basically know they're coming third already. But obviously it was a matter of sort of playing for pride almost, and they managed to get a morale boosting victory, if you like, after some of the pressing games of recent weeks, a 4-2 win over Spurs. So they went 4-0 up and then maybe took their eye off the boil a little bit in the closing stages of the game, but they'd still come away with the 4-2 win. So we'll just briefly round up that game before we get into the meat of today's episode, Liam. What did you think of that Liverpool performance? I mean, it's hard to know what to kind of take from these games almost at this stage of the season, given the situation Liverpool are in at the moment.
Yeah, I would say it was, there was definitely plenty of positives from it. I think in a sort of a perverse way, while obviously all of us would much prefer to still be in a title race and still feel the excitement and the nerves that Arsenal fans in particular are, in another way, it actually felt almost pleasant to be able to just sit down on Sunday and watch the game and not be like stressed over it. It's just more of a sort of sense of what will be. Of course, look, I want Liverpool to win every match, even if it's a pre-season friendly. Yes, they want us to win it, but we'll say, considering what looked like it was going to be at stake a month ago compared to now, it was just one of those where, yeah, all right. I think obviously the Spurs losing to Chelsea 2 days before that and like guaranteeing that we, no matter what, we'd be in the Champions League for next season, sort of helped to, I think, to take things off as well. And I think a combination of that and the rarity of like an 8-day gap between our last match and this one, it always like helped for like after a bit of a reset after a horrible April, and it felt like the shackles came off. It felt like just there was a lot more fluidity to Liverpool's play. It might matter in the greater scheme of things, but it always sensed, even from before the kickoff, as if there was like almost a collective understanding within the fans at the game, even that okay, title's gone, Champions League is assured. These last two home games are just going to be all about showing our appreciation for Jurgen Klopp. I mean, you saw how emotional he got with the Liverpool walk alone before a match. I think the players sort of fed off the energy right from the get-go. There's some wonderful goals like Harvey Elliott's obviously been the pick of the bunch. Frustrating that we switched off for that 10 minutes or so when Spurs got the two goals back, and there was, of course, that penalty shout as well when Gomez went up kind of high and kind of accidentally got Brennan Johnson. But in the end, he sort of weathered that little bit of a storm with a degree of comfort. So, yeah, but very satisfying. Obviously, it was sort of more of a, yeah, glad we'd take it rather than the exhilaration of a win to keep us in a title race. But I think after the way April worked out, it was just nice to watch Liverpool scoring freely, playing with fluidity, and most importantly, winning.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I just sort of double checked then. I mean, you mentioned what this game sort of felt like a month ago. So if we rewind to kind of pretty much a month before this game, Liverpool just beating Sheffield United 3-1. The league's in their hands. They've got sort of Man United coming up, and you're looking at all the fixtures and you're saying, wow, this game against Spurs, you know, start of May. We know what happened last time. Liverpool were in a similar situation in the title race and ended up dropping points in this game, which obviously hurt them quite a bit. But yeah, so it was one of them, and you thought, God, you know, that's going to be an absolutely huge occasion. Spurs were in much better form as well, to be fair, at that time. It looked like it was going to be a much sort of tougher test. And the contrast between that and what it was actually like, I mean, it was a strange, strange game. I think the atmosphere seemed quite decent. Obviously, I wasn't there, but sort of through the television, it seemed like a decent atmosphere in Anfield because of everything that's gone on. And I take your point, Liam, in terms of, like, you know, the stakes being taken out of games. There is that sort of element of relaxation there, but I think it's just sort of tinged with so much disappointment for me, to be honest, watching it. You know, I almost long for watching it and how kind of sleepy it was as a game in a certain way. You just kind of long for almost that nervousness, which sounds strange, but yeah, you just wanted those stakes back and that kind of adrenaline almost you get from it. So that was a shame. But I mean, the reality with Liverpool now is they're in a situation where it's difficult for them to draw motivation, to be honest, to kind of produce an uplift in their performance before the season's over. And to be fair to them, they did that. And I think you're right in terms of the motivation is coming from, you know, finishing on something of a high for Klopp. So I was impressed in terms of Liverpool's intensity within the game. I think Spurs gave the ball away in their own half like 9 times and or their own final third even in the first half. I think that's right. And that kind of shows how intense Liverpool press was. I think the crowd was encouraging that and stuff. So all that was good to see within the game. And I think obviously then you've got kind of the situation where it's towards the end, Spurs kind of threaten this comeback. And I don't really have any issue with that. I mean, I think the combination of Liverpool not really having too much to fight for, if anything, and then just being 4-0 up in a game, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens, really. And I don't ever recall a situation like this, Liverpool. I mean, take Klopp leaving out of the equation. I feel like every single time we've got to the end of the season, we've had something to fight for. Like, even in those years, whether it was Klopp's first season or sort of when things petered out under Rodgers, it felt like, you know, you were trying to, you know, seal your spot in a particular European competition, or in Klopp's first year, you know, it wasn't really about the Premier League anymore, but you had the Europa League and you were in the final stages of that. But yeah, just really since the derby, everything, and I mean, that was the 24th of April, since then, everything has just seemed so kind of, it kind of seemed like we're just turning up for these games a little bit. And obviously we got the Klopp narrative as well, but yeah, it's just a really sort of unfamiliar and quite tough situation, I think. And it's hard to kind of feel 100% fully kind of engaged in it, to be honest. And I think as well, you know, last season you're watching the games, obviously it was Southampton 4-4 final day. I think before that it was Villa. And you had kind of the narratives around, you know, certain players leaving there. I think Firmino, for example. And you were sort of like, okay, top four, we're probably not going to get it. But what can we see in these games that we can use next year? And a lot of that was Trent in midfield, for example. I'm looking at this now and I'm struggling to sort of have that same kind of connection with next season, because there's going to be a new manager, which is the main thing, but also there's going to be, you know, I think I've said on a couple of podcasts now, probably some sort of unexpected departures in the team. I think Liverpool's going to look very different next year at the start of the season. So it's hard to know almost where these games kind of sit historically. And this one is kind of a prelude, really, to Klopp's last home game against Wolves, which will obviously be its own occasion. But in its own right, it was a good Liverpool performance, just analysed completely out of context, really, with plenty of positives. And really kind of the pressure being lifted almost, and that comfort of returning to play in front of your home fans after a break. And I think you saw sort of some of the benefits of that. But yeah, I think that's what I want to say in terms of the actual game. I think, yeah, you're obviously right to mention Elliot's goal as well. One of the best we've seen from a Liverpool player all season. Again, kind of tinged with the sense of what could it have meant if it was a bigger game. But, you know, I shouldn't be too negative about it. The sort of negative period of the season, I suppose we should leave that behind. Liam, I know you wanted to say something about one of the other games that took place this weekend. Man City and Arsenal obviously still in the title race. Erling Haaland scored 4 for City against Wolves, and they won 5-1. So obviously put Arsenal in what's looking like a very similar position to what Liverpool have been in recent years. But when Haaland came off in the game, he had a bit of a altercation with Pep Guardiola hot on the heels of something similar happening, albeit in very different circumstances, with Mohamed Salah coming on against West Ham previously. And been a bit of a contrast in sort of narratives around those situations, I suppose.
Very much so. And because you think back to, obviously, we know what happened between Salah and Klopp in that West Ham game. We are well aware of the fallout from it. It seemed to like drag on for about a full week or so after the match. The pundits kind of lined up to have their say. And Souness harping on, saying that Salah is the most selfish player ever witnessed, blah, 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 and all that. Then you go see Erling Haaland, you know, scoring 4 goals, and fair play, and that is still a fantastic day's work to get it done for that. He gets substituted, and that we see him bicker with Guardiola on the sideline. Then Haaland takes a seat on the bench, and the camera catches him flinging something down onto the ground in anger. And what have we heard about it since? Like, it's 3 days now since that game. Compared to that, which is more or less, as you say, the circumstances might have been different. Like, Haaland might have been coming off after scoring 4 goals. Salah might have been about to come on, having Joe endured one of the worst months of his Liverpool career. But ultimately, we're still talking about a star player showing some insubordination towards their manager. Salah does it. He gets absolutely crucified. Haaland does it. And it's always brushed under the carpet just because he scores 4 goals. I would venture to suggest that had it been the other way around, had Salah been the one being substituted after scoring 4 goals and Joe still having his few words of Klopp and throwing stuff around the bench, and if Haaland was about to be brought on for City and Joe had his little bit of a tip with Guardiola, Salah would still be the one getting most of the crucifixion off the media. I just was baffled by the fact that Joe, that all the pundits, like, on all these shows, you know yourself, were only two, couldn't wait to have a go at Mo Salah over what he did. And look, it kind of felt like he maybe was in the wrong. And we still don't know the ins and outs of what was said either. So I suppose we're still only kind of guessing as to what the conversation might have been. But like I said, ultimately, it's still a similar situation. Player bickering with the manager in full view of the public and the TV cameras. The only pundit I have heard calling out what Erling Haaland did upon being taken off on Saturday was Roy Keane. Yes, we know that Roy Keane has that bit of a beef with Haaland's father going back to Man United and Leeds in the day. But still, like, I watched him saying it on Super Sunday the other day, and I thought, thank you, Roy. Thank you for sticking your neck above the parapet and not towing this party line of, oh, we can't say anything bad about Erling Haaland because he scores 30-odd goals every season. And again, fair play to him for that. But ultimately, whether you're an amateur striker banging in goals in Sunday League, or whether you're like the foremost goal scorer for the current champions of England, Europe and the world, you still have to respect your manager. Salah, like, looks like didn't do that, and he got home drawn and quartered by the media for about a full week. Haaland does that, and it's sort of, he scored 4 goals, so it's grand. It's one thing that I had really wanted to get off my chest, and I'm glad that you've actually given me the platform to be able to do that. I hope, if people haven't picked up on it already, I just hope it makes them think.
Yeah, I think consistency is really important, isn't it, when it's when it comes to stuff like this, and sort of keeping that kind of same energy in different cases. And, you know, I think obviously people on the sort of City side of this would say, well, you know, it got brushed under the carpet because, you know, he scored 4, City won the game, etc. And like we sort of said, the circumstances are different. But my counter to that would be, well, if Klopp and Salah do have beef, then it doesn't really matter, to be honest, because, you know, Klopp's here for 2 more games now. And it matters to the extent, you know, does it point to wider unhappiness for Salah at the club? But, you know, there's been pretty swift indications after that there isn't, and he does want to stay. Whereas, obviously, Haaland and Guardiola both look like, I mean, we don't know fully how long Guardiola's going to stick around for, but, you know, it looks like they're probably going to be in place, both of them, for at least the next couple of years. So I think if there's underlying tension there, it's a bigger deal. And the other thing I'd say on this before we move on is, like, I'm not naming any kind of names, but there's a lot of outlets in the kind of football media ecosystem that sort of just rely on kind of outrage bait, really, and just sort of say things to get engagement that I don't think they sort of fully sincerely believe, but they know that by using certain names, whether that's players or clubs, they are going to get a lot of attention from doing it. And that is the business model of a lot of outlets at the moment. And I think in situations like this, that kind of thing really flares up and maybe rears its ugly head a little bit. But I won't say too much more on that. Anyway, so the big thing Liverpool fans have been discussing after the Spurs game, because again, like we said, in terms of the actual result, doesn't matter all that much. Darwin Nunez decided to give us a story, a headline, to kind of get Arteta into a little bit this week, Liam. He's deleted all the Liverpool-related posts from his Instagram, which is, I know a lot of people might say, oh, what does it matter, it's only social media, but that is a pretty pointed step, I think, for any player to take. And I think when that happens, it's sort of no smoke without fire, definitely. His agent is also, his former agent, so to say, that's quite an important detail. His former agent has come out and said that he deleted the photos because they tell him nonsense. And the guy got angry, he's impulsive. And he also said he's going to play for Real Madrid and Barcelona, which I thought was interesting in the sense that does he view Liverpool as his kind of long-term destination, or is it going to be that thing for a lot of South American players that we've seen where their ultimate goal is to play for Real or Barcelona? I mean, first things first, what do you make of Nunez doing that? Again, you know, I think people a lot of the time have a tendency to roll their eyes over stuff like this, but to me, I think it matters. And so, sort of the whole discussion that has gone on around it, Liam.
It's definitely worth discussing, David, because the narrative is, again, I'm not 100% sure how true this is, but it definitely sounds plausible, is that he deleted all his Liverpool posts off Instagram as a result of receiving some rather over-the-top personal abuse on social media platforms. We know his probably been frustrating to watch over the last month or so in particular, and at intervals maybe over his 2 years at Liverpool. We know he misses chances that you'd reasonably expect him to score, and that he can sometimes take the wrong option in the final third. But if it is the case that he felt that the abuse got so bad and so toxic after what was a harmless 15 minutes of appearance on Sunday. I mean, I know he had that one chance maybe late on when he's through on goal, but otherwise, so difficult to really point the finger at him. Like, if he felt the compulsion to, do that on his Instagram, because of certain messages that he was getting, then that's completely crossing a line, and it's not in Tetris or Nunez, though he is totally blameless if that is the case. It is not okay to go like sending personal stuff to any footballer, and no matter what club you support, no matter who the player is, you know, keep us related to their performance on the pitch. Constructive criticism comes with the territory, no issue with that. But if you're like sending threats to a player or their family, then that's just completely not on. Like, we have to remember here that he's 24. He has an infant son. He is living thousands of miles away from his homeland in a country where his native language isn't widely spoken. And he's trying to cope with the pressure of playing for one of the biggest clubs in world football. Now, how many of us out there, Joe, who probably are beyond our 24th birthday, would be hand in heart be able to say, yeah, I could do that, no problem, and be able to take whatever flack comes away. If that is the case, then I think anyone sending messages like that should hang your heads in shame, and they're not genuine supporters. And I think that those, the fans who go to Anfield, who go to the away matches, will back him to the hilt. Like, if he's starting, or if he comes on against Villa next Monday, you can be sure his name is going to be sung probably louder than anybody else's, possibly for Jurgen Klopp. But of the players, that his name is going to be sung the loudest in that show of solidarity between the actual fans and the player himself. Now, if it is a thing that he's sort of like trying to drop a subtle hint that he's pushing for an exit, I would certainly hope that's not the case. It obviously isn't a very good look if there are someone is engaging in these like passive aggressive social media hints that, oh, they want to, you know, jump ship or go elsewhere or whatever the case might be. I know, like, Fabrizio Romano has said that you can never read too much into a player's social media activity when it comes to transfers. So again, I'm hoping that's the case here. To be fair to Jurgen Klopp, he has stood by Nunes throughout all the flack that he's taken. So he's consistently either started with him or brought him off the bench. So he's never been frozen out at any stage. He's never been publicly criticised by the manager when other managers quite easily would have. And I think we sort of know which coaches would have been most likely to do that. So, yeah, I would hope that it isn't sort of known as almost issuing a come-and-get-me plea to any other clubs who are interested. I hope he definitely gives us at least one more season. Like, I think that he definitely deserves at least one more year to prove that, yes, he can be that consistently reliable striker. As you know, he can score. I mean, he's got 33 goals in his two seasons with us so far, which is not bad going. I mean, Jack Grealish, who was signed for $100 million and is playing in a team which scores goals aplenty and has played about maybe two-thirds of the environment minutes that Nunes has this season, has scored 3 goals. Granted, he's on a centre-forward, but again, if Nunes is getting absolutely pilloried left, right and centre, including by his own club's fans, then Jack Grealish is comparatively getting away with it. I'm not calling for a witch hunt of Jack Grealish. Again, I'm just using a bit of context to say how different players seem to be judged to different standards. So, yeah, I would hope that Nunes isn't sort of trying to push himself out the door, because I do think he still has plenty to offer to Liverpool. He might just need the summer to come, have a bit of a reset and go again under Arne Slot.
Obviously, it's hard to comment on the motives of what the motives for what Nunes has done with the social media. I mean, like you say, if it is down to comments that he's received, I just think that, again, I think I've made this point before, the entitlement some football fans have is unbelievable. Like, I genuinely think as a football fan, as long as your players give 100% effort, you have no right to criticise them whatsoever. Like, I think, you know, when you're sort of putting money into a club and kind of making the club profitable as a business, I think you are owed, like, maximum effort from those players. But I don't think you're owed, like, results, if that makes sense. I mean, that's a lot of the time that is going to follow naturally from the sort of effort levels. I don't think anyone would question Nunes in terms of what he puts in on the pitch, in terms of what we can see, to be honest. But yeah, and there is obviously a point where you can constructively criticize, but in terms of like outright abuse and sort of acting like you sort of deserve better as a fan from some of these players, I just think it's ridiculous in some cases. One thing I would say is, I mean, the way that these past couple of weeks have gone, and there's various factors playing into it, but with the Salah thing, and I feel like, again, I mean, it was probably about a week ago we were discussing that on the podcast, the whole Salah issue, and now we're here talking about Nunes. It's like, I hope this isn't a prelude to Liverpool becoming a bit of a soap opera club like we see at Man United after Jurgen Klopp, because I think we've very rarely seen that happen in Klopp's entire tenure, and when it has happened, it's been all the more notable. I mean, I remember when Bobby Duncan kicked up before Silva leaving Liverpool, someone who'd never even kicked the first team ball, I'm pretty sure. And that was like a huge deal because we weren't used to anything like that happening. And even though it was a player who was about sort of 16, 17, however old he was at the time, it just kind of showed you that when there's trouble in paradise, it really stands out. So hopefully this isn't like a preview of what's to come at the club when Klopp's not there to kind of keep everything together, to be honest. And yeah, I mean, with Nunez, it is strange because, you know, I don't doubt that he's receiving a lot of abuse. I mean, it'd be... I don't understand why people have the emotional... I mean, obviously, I don't understand why they'd abuse him anyway, but I don't understand why people have the level of almost emotional intensity to be flooding players' comments at this stage of the season. I mean, you're clearly not real fans anyway if you're doing that. So just, you know, just put your phone down. Just don't watch the games at all at this point. So, yeah, I mean, so you've got that side of things. But I do think that you've got really the fans in the stadiums and a lot of, you know, Liverpool supporters who've been incredibly patient with Nunez and a lot more patient than Liverpool fans have been with other players, and fans of other clubs have been with players who've similarly kind of under-delivered relative to their price tag. So I think in terms of the fans that he can actually see himself, he can count himself probably quite fortunate in terms of support he's received. But that's not to say that obviously what happens privately in terms of things that might crop up on his phone screen wouldn't still have a big effect on him. So I'm not sort of criticising him for that. But I do think that in terms of the, you know, in-person support that he's received, I think it's been quite admirable really from Liverpool fans. And I don't think they could have done any more on their part to encourage and try and give him their backing. So the question I want to ask you, Liam, as we sort of come towards the end of today's episode is, you know, you say you want to give Nunez the third season. I don't really want to rehash kind of everything that's happened up to this point in his Liverpool career, but kind of looking forward, looking to this summer, if a club is to come in for him, and there's a debate as to what extent that would happen in terms of the type of clubs Liverpool would do business with. But if, you know, a club did come in, I mean, is there a number for you where you think, do you know what, that's worth coming to the negotiating table, that's potentially worth accepting, or for you, is he not for sale at any realistic price?
I think to answer your first question, I probably would be looking for something around the 60-65 mark that we got him for originally. I think given his age and given that I don't want to use the word potential there, but given the ceiling that he has, in today's market, I definitely think that's a fair amount. In terms of what I sell him, I think with any of the forwards, I would only consider cashing in if I think that Michael Edwards and Richard Hughes were as sure could be that there is somebody lined up to come straight in to replace them. Yes, maybe you can get a more reliable replacement than Nunez. You might be able to get someone who's a little more, bit more productive for less than what he cost. Maybe a chance to make an overall profit there, perhaps. But I mean, given how this season has gone, Liverpool cannot afford to cull their squad to any great degree. We know there are certain players who are going to be leaving, and we know that maybe that those the three who are under contract have barely played, apart from Matip, have hardly played at all this season, so don't probably feel like any great losses in that regard. But if you're talking about like fringe players, or like that, maybe, how should I put it, marketable players, to use a better term, being potentially sold, I think we have to be very, very careful with that. We saw how threadbare the squad was back in February when so many of our first team players were injured. And we're going to have sizable European commitments again next season, at least 8 Champions League games because of a convoluted new format, possibly more if, as I hope we do, we go deep in the competition. We still have the two domestic cups. Like Slaughter's going to obviously use his squad as best he can for that, but I'm not of the mindset that, oh, let's just cash in, make a quick buck, and then find that, oh, we've all this money sitting in the bank, but we can barely field a starting 11, never mind trying to fill a bench. I mean, obviously, you've seen other clubs recently having to put lads on the bench who were probably came straight from doing their GCSEs. Like, we're talking like Chelsea's and Man United's in this world. So clubs you would think would have deep squads. I think that has to be in the thinking of the power brokers when it comes to transfer activity this summer, and I would include Nunes in that.
I just I was thinking back to, you know, the price tag. I mean, you mentioned there 64 million guaranteed. Liverpool, you know, have to pay that. And I just looked up quickly the breakdown of the add-ons. So according to reports in Portugal, Liverpool had to pay 4.3 million when Nunez made 10 appearances. So that was obviously just a write-off straight away. 8.5 million when Nunez had played 60 games for the club. He's now on 94. So again, that's sort of ship has sailed. But the final 8.5 million depends on the individual and collective performance of the team throughout the contract. That's interesting because Nunez has scored 33 goals for Liverpool so far. You wonder what, you know, is kind of built into that in terms of, is there a goal scoring landmark? Is there a sort of golden boot clause, something like that, a Ballon d'Or nomination clause, things like that? Sometimes those things factor into it. And in terms of team performance, I mean, Liverpool have won a League Cup since Nunez arrived. I do sort of wonder if that kind of aspect of it is more geared towards if Liverpool win the Champions League, Liverpool win the Premier League and stuff like that. So there's a possibility that, I mean, if we're being a bit optimistic, that Liverpool have only paid, what would that be, about 76.5 as opposed to 85, which I do think changes the calculation slightly. In terms of, you know, what does it look like business-wise? I think that if anything north of sort of 50 comes in, I would at least consider it and see sort of what it looks like in terms of how is that offer built? What does Slot think of Nunez? Who are Liverpool's targets, etc., things like that. The reason I say that is because I think we've seen two seasons of Nunez under Arne Slot, under Jürgen Klopp, sorry. Is Arne Slot going to get more out of him than Jürgen Klopp did? Jürgen Klopp, one of the best managers there's ever been in terms of extracting the most out of his players. I'm probably, I think, within my rights to be sceptical of that. He is still young-ish, and he has shown a lot of potential. I don't personally expect him to become the kind of striker that he's threatened to be, if that makes sense. Like, I think he's only likely to improve slightly from what we've seen so far. I just don't think that you can kind of bank on this sort of spectacular explosion at some point. I think for me, the type of striker that he is now is broadly speaking the type of striker that he will be, and it depends on to what extent you're happy with that. I think he's probably, I wouldn't say he's sort of a outstanding net positive or negative, to be honest, because I know that Liverpool's chance generation is so much better when he's on the pitch. But how many of those chances is he then missing? I think it kind of cancels itself out. So that for me is why I think, I'm not saying I would categorically sell him for more than 50 million, but I just think, like I say, let's see where Liverpool are at in the summer. If that money came in from whether it was Saudi Arabia, whether it was a club in Europe, for example. I mean, do I think a club in Europe is going to spend big on him after what they've seen? Probably not. So do you think it probably would be it would have to be sort of a Saudi Arabian team or something like that. You know, we'll see how ambitious they are, obviously, with their recruitment this summer. I think it'd be worth a conversation, basically. But we'll see. I mean, I think the odds are that he probably stays, but I do think that there could be something that happens around at least one of Liverpool's five forwards in the transfer window, and I suppose Nunez is the one who's kind of the story of the week in that regard. So we'll very much see how that one develops. But yeah, thanks Liam for jumping on. Thanks very much everyone for listening. We've got mine and Liam's Twitter usernames in the episode descriptions of you, and do want to give us a follow on there. Just remember to look down below. And yeah, we've also got the podcast email address in there as well. So remember, you can get in touch with us through that. Liverpool's next game takes them to Aston Villa. That's Monday Night Football. And it looks like that's going to be sort of the team's locked into fourth against the team locked into third. So pretty similar occasion to the game against Spurs, I suppose. And then obviously that big one, signing off Jürgen Klopp's tenure. So we'll obviously be reflecting on that. So make sure you stick with us for these past couple of weeks of the season, heading into this giant, giant summit for the football club. But thanks very much, everyone, for listening to today's episode. And we will see you next time.